Welcome to the Painesville Assembly of God podcast. We're always encouraged to know God is working through this ministry to touch lives. So if you have a story to share of how God is working in your life, please let us know by sending us an email at info@painesvilleag.com. Now prepare your heart to hear a word from God today.
Last couple of weeks here, we've been studying through this little small book of the Bible, yet it's just power-packed and enriched with so much of God's truth. And this book of Ruth is a story that focuses in on one family during a time in Israel's history known as the Judges, where the Bible says everybody in that time period was doing what was right in their own eyes. Israel had no king. And so Ruth chapter 1, just for a little bit of recap, if you haven't been with us, and just to kind of catch us up so that we're following the story. In Ruth chapter 1, there was a famine in the land, a famine in Bethlehem. Bethlehem was known as the house of bread, and yet there was no bread in the house of bread. And we see this family, and there's a husband by the name of Elimelech, and he's married to his wife Naomi, and they have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and there's famine in Bethlehem, and he says, I don't know what we're going to do. We need food. I don't know what to do. And so Elimelech says, you know what? There's no food here, but I hear 50 miles away in Moab, there's food there. We're gonna leave Bethlehem, and we're going to go to Moab, and we'll find our way there. And so Elimelech makes a critical decision and basically walking away from trusting and waiting on the Lord to provide for their needs and instead taking matters into his own hands and going to a nation that did not worship the Lord, did not honor God, and saying, well, if God's not going to provide, then I've got to pick it up and I've got to make sure something happens. And so that's what he does. He ends up going and moving his family away, and then tragedy strikes. In Moab, Elimelech dies, and his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, they marry Moabite women, which was forbidden in Israel. Instead of moving back to Bethlehem and coming back to family, they choose at that point to set up shop, and we're just going to stay here, and they begin to marry Moabite women, and then over a course of 10 years, they don't have any children. They're barren, and then Mahlon and Chilion die, and so now you have Naomi as a widow. And she's left with two Moabite foreign daughters-in-law that are also widows. And there they are trying to make ends meet. Now, you have to understand something. At that time, women were not allowed to own land. They were not allowed to work. So where were they going to get the provision from? They're desolate. They're barren. There's not even any sons that can carry on that tradition and provide for the family. All of a sudden, they are left without anything. They're left without food. They're left without family. And Naomi hears that there is bread back in the house of Bethlehem, that God has begun to provide for his family, for his people, and that the famine is over. And so she makes a decision. You know what? I feel like the Lord's hand's been against me, but I'm going to return to Bethlehem. And it was really a return to the Lord. And partway through, she tells her daughters-in-law, Ruth, and her other daughter-in-law, she says, hey, why don't you guys go back, Orpah, why don't you guys go back to Moab? You're young. I don't have any sons left for the Levirate marriage we're going to look at a little bit today. But I don't even have any other sons. Even if I were to get married now, I'm old, but even if I were to get married now and have another son, by the time that son, would you wait for that son to marry you and provide for you? I don't have anything. You're young. Go back to your own family. Go back to your own people. I'm going back to mine. For at least then you might have an opportunity to be able to get married and have somebody provide for you. And Orpah says, okay, I'm going to take that way out. I'm going back. And after some crying, they separate. And Ruth makes another critical decision. She says, no, 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 no. I'm not leaving you. In Ruth chapter 1, 16 and 17, we read this very critical point to the story. Ruth declares, where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There I'll be buried. May the Lord do so to me, or even more, also if anything but death parts me from you. You have to understand, this was not just a critical decision to be loyal to Naomi, her mother-in-law, but this was a decision to say, you know what, I'm going to forsake everything that I know, Everything that I would, that in the natural I'd put my trust in, going back to my own people, going back to my own gods, going with my own family, I'm leaving that all behind, and I'm leaving it behind for a future that quite frankly doesn't look too bright. As a Moabite foreigner in Israel, I am not going to, chances are I'm not going to have the opportunity to get married. Chances are I'm not going to be able to really get a job. I'm going to have to beg, and I won't be able to own any land. And chances are I'm going back with this bitter woman, mother-in-law. I'm following her back, and I'm just being loyal to her, and I'm just going to trust God, but I don't know how it's going to end. That's really what's happening. She has made a decision to trust God, even though she has no idea how the future is going to work out or what's going to happen. But she's willing to leave all and put her trust in this God that Naomi serves and go back to a foreign land, a land of Bethlehem, where Moabite foreigners are not treated oftentimes very well. She says, I'm going back. And then in Ruth chapter 2, we are introduced to a new character. And we talked about this last week, and the power went out if you weren't here. We had a lot of fun last week with candles and everything. It was awesome. I got to shout at the top of my lungs, hoping everybody could hear. So unfortunately, you can't go back and listen to it if you weren't here. But if you were here, you got a treat last week. But let me just recap for those of you that weren't here. We're introduced to a new character. His name is Boaz, and he is a worthy man. They say worthy man. He's a dude's dude. He's a man of wealth. He's a man of wisdom. He's a man of worship. He worships the Lord. He's a man of war, a man of character, a man who battles. That's the kind of man that the Bible describes Boaz is. And he's part of the clan of Elimelech, Naomi's husband. And we're going to talk about how important that was. And so in need of food, Ruth decides that she's going to follow the custom of the day of the foreigners. She's going to find a field somewhere, and she's going to try to pick up the scraps and the leftovers that are left, because in Israelite time, they were told not to farm to the edges, to leave a little bit for the foreigner, for the widow, for the poor, for those that were destitute to come, and to pick up the scraps. And so here she is, a Moabite foreigner, and she decides that she's going to go out into a field. Now, this was kind of risky because she could be treated very, very poorly. But what we saw last week is God's hand was on Ruth, and God guided her, and we learned that it just so happened. There was a bunch of just so happens that it talks about in the Bible. It just so happens that she found her way into the field of Boaz, who just so happened to show up that day and take an interest in her, who just so happened that he was a part of the clan of Elimelech. It just so happened that he showed Ruth favor and told her, listen, told her, her workers, he said, listen, hey, let her glean with our servant girls. Just move her on up. She's the lowest on the social ladder, but you know what? Move her on up. I've heard about this girl. I've heard of how she left everything and how she committed herself to the Lord and how she committed herself to Naomi. So you know what? We're going to be nice to her. And I don't want anybody to touch her. Yeah, the first sexual harassment policy in the workplace. Nobody touch her. Nobody speak harshly. I mean, it was great. And then on top of that, he went above and beyond the wealthy landowner and the Moabite foreigner who's there, lowest on the social rung. All of a sudden, he begins to treat her with favor, and he invites her to the table for lunch. You just don't do that. And he, not only that, but then he served her. You just don't do that. That's not something you do. And then he said she could drink from the same water that the men had drawn water from. These are just things you don't do. This is scandalous. And yet, because of the Lord's hand, it just so happened that she found favor with Boaz. And isn't that the hand of God? Isn't that the hand of God? And he told his workers, leave a little extra behind for her to pick up. And that day, she went back to her mother-in-law with 30 to 50 pounds of food. I mean, this was huge. This was huge. He broke all social norms. And then not only did she get the leftovers, but she went back with 30 to 50 pounds of grain, of barley that day, and a little bit of leftovers from the lunch. And Naomi, who was once bitter, says, where did you get all this from? And so she tells her the story. Well, it just so happened I found my way in this field, and it just so happened this, and you didn't tell me to go to this field. I didn't know where I was going. And Naomi can see the hand of God, the hand of God that she once saw against her. She now suddenly is filled with hope, and she says, hey, the Lord is on our side. God is at work. God is doing things. How many of you know that's just the providential hand of the love of God, isn't it? How many have experienced that in your life where God's been better to you than you deserve? And that's what we see happening. God was kind of guiding things along. And so Naomi recognizes that Boaz is one of their family redeemers. And we're going to look at what that means, a kinsman redeemer. What's a family redeemer? We're going to look a little bit and just give an illustration. Next week, we'll go into that a lot deeper next week. But the two needs these poor widows had, they were without children and they were without food. So they were without food and they were without family. And Ruth chapter 2 showed us that in the need of food, God met. God providentially provided for them food, provided protection for Ruth, and so those needs. But Ruth chapter 2 ends with nothing more really happening. Let's look at verse 23. Ruth chapter 2 and verse 23 says, "So she kept close to the young women of Boaz." This is Ruth going out in the fields, keeping close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley harvest and wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. And that was kind of the end of the chapter. We ended last week. We go, okay, what happened? This was all kind of building towards something, right? I mean, God's hand is here. It's been on Ruth. Here she comes back empty. She just forsakes everything, doesn't know how it's going to end. And all of a sudden, she just so happens to find herself in the family redeemer's field. Boaz, one of their kinsmen redeemers, just so happens he shows her such favor. And you're thinking, all right, he provided her with a lot of food. And just like Naomi, she's looking, kinsman redeemer. This is going somewhere, right? This is going somewhere. He's going to get his eye. This is happening. We're going to get these needs met. So all this is happening. And Naomi can see it. And she sees his hand. And she goes, oh, I think there's a relationship happening here. I mean, she found herself a man. And this man loves the Lord. He's a worthy man. He loves the Lord. And he has a job. Ladies, let me just tell you something. If you're looking for a man, he's got to love the Lord, number one. He better have a job. If he doesn't have the Lord and he doesn't have a job, he's not for you. If he loves the Lord but has no job, wait. See if he's going to get a job. If he doesn't love the Lord, but he's got a nice job, that doesn't count either. All right, he's got to love the Lord. He's got to have a job. That's a starting place, all right? I'm just letting you know, don't get yourself in compromising situations. And we're going to look at that today, too, because this is one of those kind of chapters. I got to be honest with you. As a pastor, I'm reading through this, and I started praying, Lord, oh, Lord, how am I going to preach this today, Lord? What am I going to get out of this today? Because this is a risky passage. I don't know if you read ahead to Ruth chapter 3, but there's some questions. I'm reading Ruth chapter 3. I got some questions. You know, I don't want to just skip over and think there's some customary. There's some questionable things we're going to talk about today. So if you got little kids, you may want to put the earplugs in. We're going to look at some things today. But anyway, what we get is the end of the chapter, and it seems like there should be something, but there's no advancement in the relationship. It says that Ruth lived with her mother-in-law. So we're coming to the end of the barley harvest, coming to the end of the wheat harvest. She's been going to the fields, and it seems like there's been no advancement in this relationship. So they have the need for food, but they don't have the need for family. And it's like, oh man, what do we do? And that's when we come to Ruth chapter 3. Verses 1 to 2, and we're going to begin to title this part of the section, Questionable Advice. So Naomi, her mother-in-law, here's what it says, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young women you were?" See, he's winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now, as I shared, I mean, she's... Naomi's taking a look at this, and she goes, man, it just so happened, God's providential hand, he has hooked you up with Boaz, who's one of our family redeemers, one of our kids, he's one of our relatives. Hey, he loves the Lord, he's got a job. Hey, what about him, Ruth? We got to consider him. I got to find rest. It says about finding rest. I got to find you rest. Well, let me just tell you about finding rest. The word rest here is a common way to describe security, comfort. And basically what she's saying is, Ruth, it's time for me to find you a man. That's what it's saying. It's time for me to find you a husband. That's what Naomi's looking out, or the mother-in-law is looking out for the daughter-in-law, and she's saying, listen. I think God's hand is here. And we need this guy Boaz, he's a pretty good guy. It's time for me to find you a husband. And she says, he's our relative. Earlier he said he's our kinsman redeemer. What is a kinsman redeemer? Well, a kinsman redeemer in Israelite culture of the time was where the land of promise, when they went into the land of promise under Joshua, the land was divided up. And it was divided up by tribe, and then divided up by clan, and then divided up by family. And every family got an inheritance. Every family got a piece of the land. They got a piece of the promised land. And so Elimelech, being an Israelite from this particular clan in Bethlehem, in this particular clan of the clan tribe of Judah, was given a piece of land. Now the problem is that when famine hit, Elimelech forsook his piece of land. We don't know what happened. Perhaps he was in enough debt that he had to sell it to somebody else, and that you could do that. You could sell it to somebody else for a while to get out of debt, and then he left. But the problem is that in Israelite culture, God never desired for there to be loss long term. For there to be loss long term. Loss can happen, and these kind of exchanges happen. But there were a couple of things that could happen in order for you to get back your family land, the land that belonged to your family inheritance, to be able to get that back. One of those ways was called the kinsman redeemer or the family redeemer. The other was the year of Jubilee. The year of Jubilee was the 50th year, and in the 50th year, any kind of debts had to be canceled. Everything had to go back to the families as it was. This was a part of God's grace, knowing that certain things happen, decisions are made for you to be able to get things back. Well, the problem, or the part of the kinsman redeemer, was, is Leviticus sets up this picture, and it literally, kinsman means next of kin. So a kinsman redeemer was one who is a male relative who's a part of the family and or clan and would have a right of redemption or a right to purchase or buy back property to provide for someone whose family had been left destitute or someone whose husband had died. And so someone who was widowed, it was the responsibility then of the next of kin, an unmarried man, next closest relative. Oftentimes it was a brother-in-law, brother of the deceased. But if there was no brother, it would go further down the line in terms of families. This is why genealogies in the Bible were so important. If you ever read the Bible and you read about the genealogies, why were the genealogies important? Because it had to do with inheritance. It had to do with inheritance. It had to do with the rights and the promise that God had given to his people. And so you have this thing that is set up. And so rather than take another woman out of the family, if there was a woman whose husband had died and she was a widow and she was left childless, then the next closest relative, closest of kin, would come in and he would marry the widow, and the firstborn son out of that marriage would then take on the family name and the family rights to the property and those kind of things. He would be able to buy back that property. He would be able to redeem that, and he would be able to protect and bring that widow back into the family, back to protection, back to provision, and also to be able to redeem and buy back any of the land, any of the property that had been sold into debt. That's kind of what we see happening here. That's what a kinsman redeemer is. So Naomi looks at the situation, and he's like, boy, I can see. She's like, I can see God's hand. Look at that. We came back. I didn't tell Naomi to go to that field. I didn't tell her to do that, and I didn't know Boaz was going to show such favor. And he's a little older man, and she's a younger woman. I'm not sure what's happening, but she went to that field, and I can see it. And you know what? We got to do something. We're coming to the end of the barley harvest. We're coming to the end of the wheat harvest. She's been going every day to the field. She's not going to be going to that field anymore. She's not going to be in Boaz's line of sight. We got to do something. We got to help God out here, right? We got to help the situation out. You know where this is going, right? So then she says, well, you know, I got a plan. Okay, at the end of the barley harvest, they go out to the threshing floor. And so he's going to be there. And Ruth, we got to get his attention. We got to get his attention. He's going to be at the threshing floor. Let me tell you about the threshing floor. Because the threshing floor was a place at the end of the barley harvest. They go to a secluded area. A lot of times it was on the side of a hill. We might think a barn, but really this was kind of at the side of the hill. And then they would take their, and there'd be a cool breeze, and they usually wait till the evening because it was hot, and it would be a cool breeze, and they would take their pitchforks into the barley or the wheat, and they would throw it up in the air. And the chaff, the chaff stuff, would start to blow away, and the heavier barley or the heavier wheat, the grain that was the good stuff, the heavier stuff, would fall to the ground, and they'd gather it up. And so what you have to understand is here's this place, and what you have is Boaz going to this place, or the barley and the wheat and the threshing floor. It's more of a secluded place, and it's where they would go. And here's where the advice gets a little dicey. Ruth chapter 3, 3 and 4. Watch your kids here. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself. This is Naomi talking to Ruth. Put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. And when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, and then go and uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. What do we do with this? Questionable advice. So you see, Naomi sees the hand of God. The hand of God is guiding, and she says, we gotta help this out. There's the threshing floor. Ruth, you need a man, and I've got a plan. You need a man, and I've got a plan. So here's the plan. You got to take this relationship further. Now, every time that Boaz has seen you, you've been in working. You've been working and working and working and working, and there's nothing wrong with that. Men like a hard worker. You're a good worker. But the problem is when you're out there working, your hair's all up, and it's all whatever, and you're sweating, and you don't smell very nice, and you don't have your best clothes on. You're dirty and everything else. So here's what we need to do. He's going to be at the threshing floor tonight. So you know what you need? Take a bath, okay, because, take a bath, please, and then anoint yourself. Put on some perfume. So you smell nice and pretty. Put on your best clothes. And then, it's kind of at night. So here's what we're going to do. You're going to go down to that threshing floor. Now all the guys are kind of secluded, but the guys are out there. And they are finishing up the barley harvest. All right? So it's been good. The wheat harvest. There's been a famine for over 10 years. And man, this is a good harvest time. They have worked hard. And they're going to be down there threshing. And the threshing floor was a place where they would go and they'd work hard. And they were celebrating the end of the harvest. It was a celebration of the end of the harvest. And so there they are. They're celebrating the end of the harvest. And they're getting done. It's going to be payday. How many like payday? This is payday. They have worked hard. They get to see how much they brought in. And so they're down there, and then they're going to eat, and they're going to drink. Because, men, when men are eating good, then they're happy, when men are eating good. Ladies, let me just give you some advice. If you need something, you need to talk about a difficult subject, make sure you feed your man first. He's much happier after you feed him. Don't hit him before you fed him. Just saying. How many ladies would say that's good advice? Some of you aren't going to say anything. You just don't know where this is going. You know what I'm getting into. So parents, I would not, and then she goes on and she says, okay, get up. Then you want to watch. And when he's done eating and done drinking, he's all nice and happy. You watch where he lays down. And then you're going to go and you're going to lay down next to him. And you're going to lay at his feet. You're going to uncover his feet. And a lot of commentators believe it was actually uncover his legs, all right, not just his feet. Kind of uncover his legs, and you're going to lay down. And then when he wakes up and he sees you, you say, tell me what to do.
What?
Okay. Parents, I would not recommend you give this advice to your daughters. I'm kind of struggling a bit with this questionable advice. And how many the Bible is both prescriptive and descriptive. Okay, so let me tell you what that means. There are things in the Bible that are prescriptive. Those are the things that the Bible says, thou shalt do. Do this. Walk in this way. There are other stories in the Bible that are descriptive. The Bible is a very honest book, and it's honest about sometimes the way that people go about interpreting things, the way that people go about doing things, and then you get to see how that all worked out, and you get to see how God kind of worked in it, and what God did, and how that all worked out. This is not a prescriptive text, okay? So ladies, this is not you need a man. This is not a prescriptive text to, get all perfumed up and go, in the middle of the night and lay next to him and tell me what to do. This is not a prescriptive text, all right? This is descriptive. It is kind of showing about what is happening here. It's descriptive. So quite frankly, I want to be honest with you, this is risky. This is a risk. Ruth, up to this point, is showing great character. In fact, when Boaz came to the field and he asked who she was, and he talks to her, he says, I've heard about you. I've heard about your character. I've heard about who you are. Ruth has been a woman of character. Up until this point, she has a great reputation. But this advice is about to put her in a place where, quite frankly, she could compromise her integrity and morality. The threshing floor was not a time that you want to be. Men were really, really happy. It was payday, all right? They had worked really, really hard. They had eaten and they had drank. That was a time where men were just being men. And I don't know about going down all perfumed up and all pretty down to the threshing floor saying, what would you have me do? Ouch. Late at night, this is a danger. And so she goes up and she lays down and uncovers his feet. And again, some commentators think about the legs. I just don't know what Naomi is thinking. Now, some commentators try to sanitize it. I'll be honest with you. I was studying this. And they say, Boaz was an older guy. and Ruth was a younger woman. He was such a man of character. He would never even think of proposing marriage, and he probably would have never done that. And Naomi knew the character of both of them. She knew that he was a man of character. She knew Ruth was a woman of character, that nothing unsanitary or immoral would ever take place, just trusting in that. But she had to kind of help the will of God, putting Ruth in a position where Boaz would recognize that interest, and where Boaz would say, "Oh, you mean this is okay?" So Naomi kind of had to do that. I don't know if I completely agree with that. You know, to be honest with you, Boaz is a man. I don't care how godly he is. But you have an eligible young lady who shows up all perfumed and all dressed up at the threshing floor in the middle of the night after you've been working hard and celebrating and eating and drinking. And not only that, but you're a little bit tired. And then she's there and she's laying next to you and she's uncovered your legs. And he wakes up and you're, "And what? Tell me what to do. I don't care who you are. This is temptation. This is risky." Now, I don't think that what Naomi wanted was wrong. Let me just say that. I don't think desiring for Ruth to recognize God's hand and recognize that she needed a home and recognize in the culture and the day in which they were in that there was this man who was a godly man and that he was the right man for Ruth. I think that at times, parents, we can recognize when our children, you know, are in right relationships and when our children are in wrong relationships. How many parents would agree? I know our kids wouldn't always agree. They don't always see things the way we do, but we know them. And I don't think that what she was desiring was wrong. But you have to understand that when there was no bread in the house of bread, she was a part of a relationship with a husband and a man who said, "When it doesn't seem as if God is moving like we think he should, we've got to take matters into our own hands and do it ourselves." And so I kind of think that what's happening here is Naomi's trying to see a providential hand of God, but he's not moving as fast as she thinks he should, and she's trying to help it along, but in the meantime, putting some questionable advice here. Some questionable advice. So let me caution you, when God starts moving, but maybe he's not moving as quickly as you think he should, I would suggest that you don't try to help God out. At least not in ways that put yourself in a very risky position. Because here's what's risky about this. Boaz, being a man of character, could have said, "Hey, what is going on here? What's happening here? I didn't call for this. Hey, everybody, this Moabite, I just want it known," and publicly embarrassed her and ruined her good reputation. Or, quite frankly, in this position, he could quite possibly take advantage of her sexually. He could put her in a compromising situation and would have had no business and nobody would have known. And she came there in the middle of the night and nobody knew. And she was throwing herself at me and this is what I do. This was a very immoral culture. You have to understand, everybody in the times of the judges was doing what was right in their own eyes. This thing could have gone a bunch of different directions here. And even if God was in it, because of questionable decisions, questionable advice, and not waiting on the Lord, it could have gone wrong. I mean, I think of Abraham. When he and Sarah decided that you know, God said, "You're going to have a child through Sarah," but that wasn't happening. It wasn't happening in their time. It wasn't happening as quickly as they liked. So what do? "Here's my servant Hagar. This is what culturally is right. Let's do what's culturally acceptable." But it was wrong because it wasn't the will of God. Something happens when we get ahead of the will of God, when we're not patient. And friends, the end does not justify the means. We need to learn to wait on the Lord and not try to manipulate his will. Nevertheless, Ruth, she responds with, "All you say I will do," in Ruth 3:5. No protest, just a willingness to follow her mother-in-law's advice. I'm hoping for a little protest. Perhaps Ruth is a little naive. I'm not sure. So how's this gonna play out? So Ruth 3:6-9, she went down to the threshing floor, did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went and lay down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. And at midnight the man was startled, turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." So what we see is Ruth following the advice. Here she goes, sneaking down to the threshing floor. She keeps her eye on Boaz because she doesn't want to uncover the wrong man's feet. That would be bad. And He eats and he drinks and he lays down next to his pile of grain, probably to protect it and guard it. And she sneaks over kind of ninja style, you know. Here she is, she's just real quiet, ninja style. And she kind of uncovers his feet, his legs, and lays down. And then something startles the man about midnight. I don't know, perhaps the cool breeze blew across his legs. And he's like, "Woo, what was that?" I'm not sure. I'm just kind of, this is my own commentary just to make you laugh, because the story's kind of uncomfortable. And it's kind of star. He wakes up and he's like, who are you? You know, you can just kind of pick him waking up and kind of rubbing his eyes. And it's really dark and there's no electricity and there's no nightlight. You know, I mean, it's just kind of the stars. And and he's like, who is that? What is that? Is that a woman down there? I don't remember that. What happened? We ate and stuff. I don't remember that. Who are you? What's happening? Right? What's going on? And Ruth responds up to this point, kind of on script with what Naomi came up with. And then all of a sudden she goes off script. And she ends with, "I am Ruth, your servant." And then she goes on with this, "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And what's interesting here is the word servant. We saw this word earlier. When Ruth had ended up in Boaz's field in Ruth chapter 2, and he called her over and he was being nice to her, and she said, "What do I do to deserve all of this?" She uses the word servant, and when he speaks kindly, he says, "You've spoken kindly to your servant." And that word is kind of to describe somebody who's almost like a slave. Almost like a slave, but like the lowest rung of the ladder, the worker. But this time, it's a totally different word. Although it's translated servant in the English, in the Hebrew, it's a different word that's used and denotes a relationship with someone. Basically, "I am your servant" is saying, "I'm available for a relationship with you." What Ruth is doing is she is proposing to Boaz. This is not on script. I mean, and this is kind of outrageous. You have a foreigner, a Moabite who has come, a Moabite servant, proposing to the owner of land, proposing to the Israelite owner of land. This is not something that you did. This is not something that you do. But she says, "Listen, I want you to come under, spread your wing over me." And she's basically letting him know, "Listen, you're a family redeemer, and I'm giving you permission to pursue me in marriage. I'm giving you permission to pursue me in marriage." And so she uses that same word that he used in Ruth 2:12. He said, "You've come under the wings of the Lord." And she says, "Yes, I've come under the wings of the Lord, and you're his servant. You're his servant. You spread out your wing over me." And again, this is more than what Naomi had said, and it was kind of preposterous that a Moabite would propose to an Israelite, especially an Israelite landowner. How is Boaz going to respond? This was risky, to say the least. He could have said, "You know what, get out of here. Go back home, and you can never work in my field again. What are you doing?" He could have taken advantage of her, as we talked about, because this is risky and dangerous. But Ruth 10 tells us what kind of man Boaz was. And it says in Ruth 3:10, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich." And I think at this time in the story, as it's kind of building up, you kind of go, okay, he's responded favorably. You take that collective breath, and from the very first words, he's responding to her. His reaction is affectionate as he refers to her as daughter. He's honored that she would be open to marriage between the two of them, that she hasn't gone after a younger man. And I kind of picture Boaz as stunned, like, you want a relationship with me? Hey, you want me to marry you? You know, out of all the men? And the question is, where do they go from here? Now that Ruth's feelings are out there for Boaz, where do they go from here? Will they cross the line? I mean, it's midnight. They're out under the stars, right? They're in a secluded place. Nobody knows Ruth has come out. They're both kind of interested in each other, and they've expressed their feelings. And what do you do after weeks of interest and things building up? What do you do? But it's here that we begin to see the character of Boaz. Starting in verse 10, we see the character of Boaz. And I want to just end this message this morning by talking about three principles of the behavior of a worthy person. What are three principles? What do we see from Boaz's reactions? What are three principles of behavior of a worthy person? Because today, I think we need these. I think we need these today. Verse 10 opens with Boaz. He's blessing Ruth. And so the first thing that we have about a worthy person understands the importance of patience. A worthy person understands the importance of patience. As we talked about with Naomi, she's looking at the end of the barley harvest, at the end of the wheat harvest, and she's saying, the opportunities are going downhill. God's hand, I've got to help it along. We've got to do something. We've got to move this along. We've got to hurry this up. And Naomi's in a hurry. But what we see with Boaz, Boaz is not in a hurry. Boaz is valuing patience. And that's what we see in verse 10. He immediately begins after this successful harvest, after the celebration, this young woman who's smelling all good and looking all good and coming down to the threshing floor in the middle of the night and uncovering his feet and his legs and saying, hey, I'm here. I want to pursue you in marriage. This is temptation at the highest. But Boaz recognizes the importance of waiting and the value of patience in doing things God's way. From the very beginning, this is what he does. When temptation comes, when this situation comes, you know the first thing he does, and this is good advice for any of you. You know what he does? He brings God into the situation. You want to begin to take care of temptation, you bring God into it. You bring God into it. You got to bring the Lord into it. That's what he starts out with. He starts out by bringing God. May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. He says, I'm bringing God into this. I'm bringing God into this. He desires to honor Ruth, and he's setting the values and the boundaries of the relationship, and he calls her daughter. It's more than just him recognizing that she's younger, but really what he's saying is, you know what? You know whose daughter you are? You are the Lord's daughter. You're the Lord's daughter. We got to do this right. We got to set the boundaries, and we see more insight in verse 11. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know you're a worthy woman. He says, listen, you're an honorable woman. You're a worthy woman. You're a Proverbs 31 woman. You're a Proverbs 31 woman. You are somebody that I recognize that is a worthy woman, a woman of noble character. Everybody knows it, and I want us to do this right. And it's true, I'm a redeemer, yet there's a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight in the morning. If he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he will not redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until morning. What he's saying is let's not get ahead of God because there's an order to things. And I may be a redeemer, but I'm not the next closest one. And I don't want to mess this up by getting things out of order. I don't want to mess it up by getting things out of order. What he's doing is he's bringing the Lord in and he's setting the values and the boundaries of the relationship. Setting the boundaries by saying, we've got to do this the Lord's way. If we want this to be right, if we want this to be blessed, there's an order to things and we've got to trust the Lord's order. I got to be honest with you. Today, everybody's got the order backwards. We get interested, we're dating. Oh, this might be good. Let's move in together. Oh, let's get interested. Oh, let's have relations beforehand. Forget about marriage. Let's let that wait and let's see if this relationship works out. You know the highest statistics for a divorce really come from people who are living together before they're married? It's out there. It's proved by sociologists and statistics that are not Christian statistics. Because it's not God's way. I know I'm saying some things that are not politically correct. And God can move, and he can forgive, and he can move in situations. So if that was your order of things, you bring it before the Lord, and you allow the Lord to redeem it, and God can. But beforehand, we've got to wait, and we've got to do things God's way. Boaz recognizes the providence in the hand of God too, but he says, I can't compromise this noble woman. I can't compromise my integrity. I've got to wait for God's plan. We've got to do this right. There is somebody else who is in the right place of redemption, and we've got to at least go and try to do this right. And that's what we need to learn. A worthy person is willing to wait on the Lord. A worthy person is not interested in what costs the setting aside God's will. Boaz is not interested in getting what he wants at the cost of setting aside God's will. You can't be interested in getting what you want at the cost of God's will. There are some things that are more important. And he's not going to force what he wants. Psalm 37:7, the beginning says, be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Worthy people understand the value of waiting on the Lord's will and not setting aside or pushing for something else. Isaiah 30:18, therefore the Lord waits to be gracious to you. Therefore he exalts himself to show mercy to you. For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are all those who wait for him. Friends, we need to learn how to wait on the Lord. We need to learn the value of patience. We need to learn how to trust and honor the Lord and honor the process that He has set forth. If this relationship is to really be the will of the Lord, then the other Redeemer will relinquish his rights of redemption. But Boaz is not willing to compromise that. Please hear me. A worthy person understands the importance of waiting. Secondly, a worthy person understands the value of integrity. Integrity means you're the same person inside and out. Integrity means that you're the same person in public as you are in private as you are in public. And this is what we see with Boaz. Here they are at midnight under the stars, and she's laying down, and oh, we're kind of cuddling under the stars, and she's just proposed, she's just kind of offered herself to me. But Boaz is a worthy man, and he understands the value of integrity. He wants God's will more than his own way. Do you want God's will more than your own way? Rather than give in to temptation, he chooses to value integrity. And how does he do that? We could follow Boaz's example. First of all, Boaz chooses to protect Ruth physically. He ends the conversation by telling her, remain until morning. And this might not be the ideal situation. And we go, why didn't he just send her home? Why? What is this? But you have to understand, this was the wisest course of action given the circumstances. There was a dangerous place, a threshing floor. Usually it was outside the city of Bethlehem. There was all kinds of wild animals. And there they are in the middle of the night. Boaz didn't ask for this. And Ruth was given some bad advice. So here they are. They find themselves in this situation. And Boaz, assessing the situation, says, you know what? It's better that I protect her. That I protect her from harm. Now, I don't believe anything happened. We don't think that anything happened here physically between the two of them. And he's protecting her. He's protecting her. And he's also protecting her reputation. Ruth 3:14, she lay at his feet until morning, but arose before anyone could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. He says, listen, this could ruin everything. This was just really bad advice. We found ourselves in an awkward situation here. We got to make the best of it here. So here's what we're going to do. If you try to go now, you could be risking in danger. So just as the sunlight starts to come up, that's when you go. And we're not going to let anybody know what's happening. We got to protect your reputation. Listen, worthy people protect the reputation of others. We live in a society where mobily we can do whatever we want. We can put out whatever we want. We can shove stuff out on social media. We can completely embarrass whoever we want to embarrass with information we have. The Bible says that a worthy person protects the reputation of others. Now, I'm not talking about hiding. This is not talking about hiding sin, all right? That's not what we're talking about. But you got to handle it in the right way. Boaz is saying, we need to handle this situation. Ruth's reputation is on the line. Her reputation is on the line. You say, well, how could they not recognize? Well, you got to remember that Jacob, you know, he got married to the wrong woman. He didn't even recognize it until the morning light. I mean, it was dark in those days. He just didn't see it, you know. He's not trying to hide. He's trying to protect her reputation. He didn't ask for this. Ruth didn't ask for this. And let me encourage you that we need to be worthy people. We need to protect the reputation of others. We need to care for the value of others. We need to protect them and handle matters privately and discreetly. A worthy person values and protects the reputation of others. Thirdly, a worthy person understands the necessity of loving extended family. And in Ruth 3:15 through 17, he said, bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out. He held it and measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it fare, my daughter? She's like waiting all night. Like, I don't think she slept all night. What happened? What went on? And he told her all the man had done for her, and these 6 measures of barley he gave to me. For he said, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. You know what Boaz understands? He understands Naomi has some needs as well. He didn't get mad at her for what she did. He understands the desires, the things that were there. He knew the relationship with Ruth went beyond just Ruth, but it included Naomi as well. And so Boaz blesses Ruth with a shawl full of barley to take back. And he says, don't go back empty-handed. Why? Because when Naomi had returned to Bethlehem, she had declared, I am empty. And when they left for Moab, she said that she was full. But there was no food in Bethlehem. How could she be full? Because it was about family. She had no son. She had no husband. She had no grandchildren born to her. This statement was a statement about, listen, I'm going to take care of things for you. We just need to be patient and do it right. He was sending a message to her. He was sending a message. You're going to be cared for, but wait. Let's do it the Lord's way. Let's wait on it. But I want you to understand that he cared for the family. He cared for his mother-in-law. He wanted to relax. He wanted to rest. He wanted to stop worrying. He understood that she was trying to do and what she was trying to do, but it was a reminder, listen, God is in control. We're going to do it God's way. And what's it do for Naomi? Verse 18, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but settle the matter today. This results in Naomi moving to a place of patience. Where before she was worried and she was impatient and trying to make things happen, this worthy man, Boaz, puts her in a place where she's willing to wait. See, Boaz cared not only for Ruth, but for the extended family. And for those of you who are looking to get married, let me give you a little bit of advice. When you get married, you marry the extended family. You get the in-laws, you get all the family drama, you get it all. It's part of the deal. It's part of the deal. And if you truly love the person you're married to or the person you're going to get married to, you will love their family. You won't go to their family's activities. You will be a part of their family no matter how weird or how different it was from yours, because it loves your family to love their family. You will do that. That's what worthy people do. If you don't like their family, don't get married to them, because you get the whole kit and caboodle. It's just a part of it. It's a part of it. I'm speaking the truth. You may not like it. That's okay. Talk to me after. We'll do some counseling. Because you need to understand this. This is important for you to understand. A worthy person will love their spouse and treat their spouse's family well. So here we are at the conclusion. I'm just going to ask again the team to come up and play behind me. But once again, we're left at a place with waiting, because we don't know how this is going to end. Boaz said, just wait. In the morning, I'm going to try to take care of this. We'll go down to the city. There's a redeemer that's closer. But we're just left hanging. We don't know how this is going to end. But what we are left with is that we're left with this. We're left with many unanswered questions. But the truth is waiting on the Lord is better than trying to push in your own way. Naomi was impatient. Her fear of the future held, what the future held, and kind of a delay, not seeing God move in the way that she thought he should. She's seeing the providential hand of God. She goes, I've got to move a little bit faster. She was trying to rush some things, and it led to give some questionable advice. She put Ruth into a very risky situation. She put Boaz into a very risky situation that could have damaged reputations, that could have damaged a place of security in the field of Boaz, could have violated Ruth physically. But oh, by the grace of God, Boaz was a worthy man. And he valued patience and waiting over getting his own desires met. And he protected Ruth physically, protected her reputation, and used wisdom to love those beyond Ruth into her extended family. So friends, let me ask you something. Are you waiting on the Lord for something? Is there something you're waiting on the Lord for? Don't get anxious and don't get impatient. Impatience can lead to questionable decisions. Wait on the Lord. Trust the Lord. Look for the doors that He opens and don't try to force the ones He's not. Be a worthy person. Value patience and waiting on the Lord over your own way. Value integrity and the reputation of loving others instead of seeking to fulfill your own selfish desires. Friends, what do you need for the Lord to do in your heart today? Let's bow our heads this morning. Friends, I want to pray for those of you, you're waiting on the Lord for something today. You've been waiting for a while. Maybe you're seeing God's hand move and you think, why isn't that happening yet? Why hasn't that happened yet? Why hasn't this happened yet? And you're in a place of waiting today. And you would say, Pastor, will you pray for me? I'm in a place of waiting and I need the Lord today to guide me. I need patience. I need the patience to continue to wait on the Lord. If that's you, will you slip up your hand today? I want to pray for you. Yeah. Yeah. Father, you see all these hands today. And God, you know all of these situations. You knew all of these circumstances. You know what's in everybody's heart. And God, what they're waiting on and what they're dealing with. But God, we know that you know the plans that you have for us, plans to prosper us and not to harm us, to give us hope in the future. You said that in Jeremiah 29:11. God, you're the one that guides our steps. You're the one that plans our ways. That God, you've got good things planned for those who love you and are called according to your purpose. You work these things out for your glory. So Father, I pray that rather than get impatient and try to force things our own way, rather than try to make questionable decisions that could put your will for our lives at risk or more difficult, Father, give us the patience to wait on you. Give us the trust to wait that God, in your time, you can work all things out. that, Lord, your hand, you are providentially moving, and you've got the right timing, and you've got the right person, or you've got the right situation, or the right job, or you've got whatever we're waiting on, you know when that is. So God, give us the ability to take our hands off and to trust in you. Give us the ability, God, to wait on you. Father, we just thank you and bless you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. We pray that you are encouraged and strengthened by God's word. For more information about Painesville Assembly of God, please visit PainesvilleAG.com.